The Tudor History and Travel Show is a podcast that brings Tudor history to life by exploring Tudor places and artifacts in the flesh. You will be travelling through time with Sarah Morris, the Tudor Travel Guide, uncovering the stories behind some of the most amazing Tudor locations and objects in the UK. Because when you visit a Tudor building, it is only time and not space which separates you from the past. And now over to your host, Sarah Morris.
Hello, it's Sarah, the Tudor Travel Guide here. Welcome to this month's episode of the Tudor History and Travel Show. This is just a note to say that if you are hearing this, then you are not currently part of my membership programme and will only be hearing the first part of each show. In order to access full episodes of the Tudor History and Travel Show, you will need to become a member of my membership site, The Ultimate Guide to Exploring Tudor England, via the link in the description associated with this podcast. Now, before we get into this month's episode, and we are travelling not too far away from where I live, up to the historic town of Warwick to explore the glorious Lord Leicester building, I just wanted to make a couple of announcements. The most important of those is that I have just launched, in association with Adam Pennington, both of us co-founders of Simply Tudor Tours, an online programme called The Rise and Fall of Anne Boleyn. Over the course of just over 2.5 months, Adam and I will be co-hosting a series of live lectures, interviews, and obviously associated Q&As with a number of different historians and historical researchers who have a passion for Anne Boleyn. And our aim is to be exploring perhaps some of the less often slightly quirky subjects associated with Anne, such as the rise of the Boleyns, her cosmopolitan circle of friends, the transition between the households of Catherine of Aragon and Anne Boleyn, her coronation and how Henry chose and tried to assert her God-given right as his queen consort, the accusations of witchcraft laid against Anne Boleyn at her fall in May 1536, and also specifically her trial as an engine of state rather than a mechanism to try or test the guilt of the accused. And finally, a live interview with author Sandra Vasoli about her latest research on the letter purportedly written by Anne Boleyn from the Tower. If you want to find out more details about each of these sessions and our wonderful speakers, as well as a couple of digital giveaways that we will be gifting to anybody who registers for the programme, then simply check out the link in the description associated with this podcast that will take you through to the information and also to the booking page on our Simply Tudor Tours website. Speaking of Simply Tudor Tours, I just want to give a very, very quick heads up that booking will be opening for the first of our 2025 tours in May, the 19th of May to be precise. We aim to run three tours in 2025, and the one that's running in May of that year is the first one up, and it is called Anne and Elizabeth, Mother, Daughter, Traitors, Queens. Now, booking is not yet open, but if you're not as yet registered on our VIP mailing list but are interested in our tours, then again, just check out the link in the description and you will be able to subscribe to that list and be among the first people to find out when booking opens, because we do open booking to our VIP list 1 week before it opens to the general public. Okay, well, I think that's all I need to say with regards to our general public announcements for this month. It is time to go time travelling. Now, as I said, I didn't have to go far to record this episode, but as you will know if you followed me for any length of time, I have been urging people to visit the historic town of Warwick for for a number of reasons. There are three fantastic historic locations there. Of course, there is the castle. Then you have the Beecham Chapel at St Mary's Parish Church. And then the third gem, the third jewel in the crown for Warwick, is the Lord Leicester. Now, as you will hear in this podcast, the Lord Leicester recently underwent a major renovation project, which was completed and opened to the visitors last year. And I had the opportunity to nip along to Warwick and to meet with their master, Heidi Mayer, who, of course, will introduce her role and take us on a deep dive into the history of the Lord Leicester as we tour the buildings together. Just before we begin, I'd like to remind all of you that there is a show notes page associated with this podcast where we have included many images of the rooms and the spaces which are under discussion. It is well worth checking out. So, yes, look for the link in the description associated with this podcast. We'll also be including a link to the Lord Leicester's website, so you can find out more about them directly from there. And also, of course, if you're planning a visit, you'll be able to check out any relevant visitor information. Right, well, with that, I give you the Lord Leicester in Warwick. So welcome, dear listener, to this month's episode of the Tudor History and Travel Show. And I find myself just a short way up the road, actually, from where I live. And I am in the town of Warwick in Warwickshire. And I'm visiting a place that's been on my list for quite some time, the Lord Leicester in Warwick, which is a building which has a history that spans over 900 years. And I'm here today to explore that history with our guest and master of the Lord Leicester, Heidi. Hi, Heidi. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the Lord Leicester.
It'd be lovely if you could just say a few words of introduction about yourself and what is a master of the Lord Leicester?
So the masters of the Lord Leicester were first installed here in the reign of Elizabeth I. And my predecessors span a period of about 400 years. The first master was Ralph Griffin, installed in 1571, and he was followed shortly thereafter by a really controversial figure called Thomas Cartwright. And since then, we've had 33 masters. I'm the 33rd master and the first female master. And I live here at the Lord Leicester in the master's house. And my job is to run the charity, make sure that our extremely precious heritage site is looked after and is still standing, and to welcome visitors and guests to the Lord Leicester. My other task is, of course, is to look after the brethren, who are the retired soldiers and wounded warriors who live here within our charity, our charitable mission, who live here at the Lord Leicester.
So a couple of things I just want to point out. I mean, it is one of the most magnificent of the heritage buildings in Warwick. If anybody comes here and they wander down the high street, they'll see this beautiful timber-framed building towards the end of the high street, close to where the west gate of the town used to be back in the day, I understand.
Oh, the west gate's still there.
Kind of still there, really,
isn't
it? It's
still there.
It's quite magnificent.
Yeah, pedestrians walk under it. But the Lord Leicester, it is an extraordinary building. And I'll let you into a little secret. When I was contemplating the job, whether I'd like to be master here, one of the decisions that helped me on my way was that I literally fell in love with the buildings. I saw them as I walked down the high street of Warwick, and they are absolutely beautiful. These beautiful half-timbered buildings with this honey-coloured limestone, wattle and daub, and straight out of the Middle Ages.
They really are.
They really are. And they were built in the Middle Ages, but they became really of great prominence in the period, in the Tudor period.
And the other thing I just wanted to note is I reckon that many of our listeners will notice you have a little twang of an accent. You're American, aren't you? Or that's you British by birth, but lived in America for a long time?
Yes, I was born in Britain, but I spent most of my adult life working and living in the United States. I have an American husband, American children. And in some ways, I have a very American outlook about things.
Yes, well, as I think I was mentioning before we started recording, many of our listeners are from the US, so they'll be very interested in your background. So the other thing that I think would be quite useful to state up front was the original purpose of this building. And you were mentioning about the Brethren, and perhaps you could just give us a top line summary of what the purpose of this building actually is and how it came about.
Yes, it's a question a lot of people ask. Of course, I think I have to give you a little bit of background about this, about what was going on in the Tudor age. When Elizabeth I inherited the throne, Britain was in a turmoil. And a large part of that was because of Elizabeth's father's, Henry VIII's, policies on dissolution of the monasteries and the Reformation policies. Because what it created by the time Elizabeth became queen was a lot of very poor people living on the streets. It's estimated there was probably about 150,000 people that had been tipped out of monasteries and religious buildings that were actually homeless in England. And when Elizabeth came to the throne, Lord Burghley said to her, "Ma'am, if you don't do something about the homeless and the poverty on the streets, we're going to have a civil war in England." And so Elizabeth went in her usual manner, practical manner, "I have to do something about it." And she really did. She started by supporting the poor laws, passed and supported a lot of the poor laws passed by Parliament. And it created really the responsibility of parishes to create places, philanthropic places, where people deserving poor of the Tudor period could come and live and be looked after. And it was really important in Tudor Britain to get these people off the streets. And the places that each parish created were the name of the places they called them hospitals. So not in the modern sense of a hospital, but derived from the word of hospitality, and to look after people and to care for the deserving poor of Tudor England. And so it was on this foundation, these sort of political origins, that hospitals were created throughout Britain. And we, the Lord Leicester, its full name is the Hospital of Robert Dudley, Earl of Leicester. So it is, in short, it's often referred to as the Lord Leicester Hospital. We refer it to as the Lord Leicester. Mm-hmm. So Robert Dudley was, you know, he's one of the leading proponents of Puritanism in England. But not only that, we all know that he was very interested in developing his very intimate relationship with the Queen, and in fact very much wanted to marry her. And I don't know, this is a personal spin on it, but I don't know whether he wanted to impress her. But he rode out from Kenilworth one day from his big castle. He rode into Warwick deliberately looking for an impressive building where he could create and found one of these philanthropic institutions that the Tudors referred to as hospitals. And he rode into Warwick, saw the buildings at the time. They belonged to the guilds of Warwick, these extraordinary, beautiful buildings that they had built in the late 1300s, and must have decided, "That's impressive enough for me. I want those buildings." And managed to persuade the guilds of Warwick to give him their buildings. He was, of course, extremely influential in England. He was extremely well known, very prominent, had this very, very close relationship with the Queen. The guilds were hardly in a position to say no to him. So he acquired the buildings, and on Boxing Day in 1571, the guilds moved out and Robert Dudley moved in. He installed the master and 12 brethren to live here, and that was the beginning of the Lord Leicester. And we have occupied the buildings ever since, with the master and the brethren living here and creating the community that still endures to this day.
Oh, it's remarkable. I love it. And I'm particularly here now because I know you've come to the end of a huge restoration, or you're towards the end of a very large restoration project. And what we're going to do today is go and have a wander around and have a look around. And you're going to take us on the visitor route because, of course, people can come and visit the Lord Leicester. So we're going to be seeing the different spaces that people can come and visit for themselves.
Bearing in mind my my life in the States, it was extraordinary that in the 1800s, this was one of the most popular places for American tourists to come and visit.
That's incredible.
They would come to the castle, but then on their list was the Lord Leicester. So from the 1800s, this site became very popular with American tourists. And I think it had a lot to do with Nathaniel Hawthorne. And Nathaniel Hawthorne was an American diplomat based in Leamington Spa. And he liked to come here to the Lord Leicester and sit in the gardens. And he published a book called Our Old Home. And his writing really portrayed it as probably the real McCoy in terms of medieval buildings. And he spent time talking about the brethren, these old worthies that would be sitting outside in their Tudor robes, smoking their pipes. And he described all of this in great detail. And I think it must have absolutely captured the imagination of Americans who had this vision and view of what medieval England might be like. And of course, this is the Victorian era when the Gothic world and all things Gothic are really important. So you not only have a Victorian love of the Gothic world, but then you actually have the real deal, the real thing.
Yeah.
And so I think this is probably, oh, and not only that, the rail station opened in Warwick about that time.
Right.
So. And so with the opening of the railroad, it was very, very easy to take a train from London. And the American tourists absolutely flocked here. And we know that because we have visitor books, and you can see the visitor books here.
Oh, yeah.
And in our visitor books are just peppered with people who have come from Pittsburgh, USA, Chattanooga, here, USA, and you see all the way through that.
Yes, so we're actually looking at a facsimile, I guess, of a guest book, so we can see all the signatures. USA there.
A lot from Philadelphia. Where have we got? We've got Boston, we've got New York.
Oh, there's Boston and New York, yeah.
And then we have
Georgia.
So it's really quite fascinating. And as an American...
Oh, my goodness, somebody from Australia here.
Yep, someone from Australia. But the Americans loved it here.
Oh, wow.
And they came and... So we've actually created a database of all the Americans that came here with their names on it. So if you're an American and you visit the Lord Leicester, you'd be able to plug in the town that you come from and your name and find out if you had any relatives from the past who came here.
Oh, wow, guys, you're going to have to come down. And if you're from the US and you're visiting, this is another reason why you must get down to the Lord Leicester. That would be so much fun. So we've got the privilege of going on a tour, as I mentioned, just as those as visitors today can do. So shall we head off and you can perhaps take us through? I think we're going to be going through some of the ages of the Lord Leicester and its evolution.
Yes, of course. Follow me.
Okay, let's go. We've just come outside. It's a lovely... The sun has come out. It's beautiful, isn't it, for October? It's incredibly warm.
It is. This is a little sun trap. And out here, the frontage actually runs along the Guildhall. And the frontage is right on the High Street of Warwick. And it's we have tables and chairs outside where people who come to our cafe can sit outside under this extraordinary medieval building and then bask in this little sun trap that we have here. It's always warmer here than anywhere else
in Warwick.
Beautiful.
And I should say for those folk who are listening, as per usual, there will be a show notes page associated with this podcast, and we're going to take some photos as we go around so you'll be able to see some of the features and the buildings and the spaces that Heidi is showing us today. So do make sure you check out the description for that link. And this is, I mean, this is, it's gorgeous. I can see we're about to go under a gateway into an inner courtyard. We've got the lovely Bear and Ragged Staff, which is, of course, Leicester's emblem and I presume his coronet above it.
Oh, yes. We are now walking into the medieval courtyard of the Lord Leicester. It's typical of medieval domestic courtyard architecture. One of the extraordinary things, I met, Sarah, you said earlier that it's one of the most beautiful buildings in Warwick, and I would submit that it's probably one of the most beautiful medieval buildings in all of the British Isles.
I'm not going to contend with you, actually, and it's... It's everything you would want to see from a medieval courtyard.
And what when architects or architectural historians come here, they just sort of are a little speechless because from an architect's perspective who studied buildings in Britain, they always come away saying it is quite extraordinary how the craftsmen of the Middle Ages, the 1300s, were able to put up such a complex building in such a short time. It was put up over a period of about 40 years, from the late 1380s to about 1420, 1430. And to be able to haul all of the timbers from all across England. And we know that the timbers that made this building come from the New Forest, from Wales, from Kent,
really?
From Warwickshire. Yeah, we know that they come from all over England to be able to put them up just by, basically by hand. Is really quite extraordinary. And then the second thing they say is, and it must have been incredibly expensive to put this building up. Who was the person... Who was wealthy enough in Warwick to have enough money to pay all those labourers for 40 years and to pay for all the materials and put this building up in that period of time?
So we don't know who founded or was the patron of the Lord Leicester at the beginning.
We know that the guilds were given the land and the chapel by Richard II. And then they made a decision to build these buildings. Now, as to who actually was the patron and who paid for the buildings, we really don't have any evidence of who that person was. Almost certainly it was a patron, had a lot of money. Mm. It could have been that the guilds themselves, who were very wealthy, it was the Guild of St. George, they could have paid for a portion of the building. But there is a big question over who actually paid for it, because it was an extraordinary accomplishment for the medieval building. I mean, for medieval times, this site, the footprint of this site is really very big.
Yes.
And very complex.
What kind of size of acreage do we cover with the buildings that exist?
2 acres, 3 acres,
okay.
4 acres. I'm not. It depends whether you include the gardens or not. But the point is that it encompasses a guild hall, two great medieval halls, living quarters for the master who lived in the master's house, administrative offices for the people who worked in the guild, lodgings where the monks and the different guilds members lived, and a chapel. So really, it's very complex for the medieval period. And it was truly, I think that the Guild of St. George in Warwick was very prominent, very important. And by building this extraordinary building, they were projecting that power and that influence to the town and surrounding areas of Warwick.
And the guilds were basically merchants, right?
The guilds are, I mean, the guilds are, you know, they rather than the nobility, who the nobility lived in Warwick Castle, controlled all the lands, was the king's man, but the guilds were very much about civic governance, about the commerce of the town. This particular guild, our records show this particular guild was more about the legal profession and business and commerce. There were some guilds that were about, they were builders, craftsmen, ironmongers, blacksmiths, but this particular guild here at the Lord Leicester was very much about commerce and the legal business of the town.
Right. And just, you know, we're standing right in the middle of the courtyard here, and you were just describing some of the buildings, but maybe we could just go round and just look at what we're looking at. So on one side, is this the Great Hall?
This is the Great Hall. This great hall was built in the early 1400s, and from the very, very beginning when the guild built it, it was designed to be a banqueting hall. It wasn't designed to be anything more than to go and have fun and drink ale, and also to look after travellers who had come through the West Gate into the town of Warwick, which was a walled town. We still have the part of the wall here on this site that you'll see later. But it was designed to welcome travellers into the Great Hall, where they could spend the night, where they can get food, be looked after. And I can't even imagine how many thousands of mugs of ale have been drunk in the Great Hall.
It's a great thought.
It's very much, it is a medieval hall with medieval beams. It's seen kings and queens who've been dined here and who've visited. James I, when he came to Warwick, this is where, in this Great Hall, this is where he had his banquet, his 3-day banquet. There was a fire at Warwick Castle, so he couldn't have the banquet there. He had it here in the Great Hall. And the town took 10 years to pay for James I's banquet.
For three days. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Ross had this way of bankrupting places that they visited.
I think it came close here in Warwick.
So basically this building is kind of half stone, half timber, and then over at right angles to that on the other side of the courtyard, you were pointing out this is the master's house. Is this where you live?
Yes. As we move on round the courtyard, and the courtyard obviously is a square, as we move on, we come to the master's house. It is a little misleading because it's absolutely covered in Victorian bling. So when in the 1800s the Victorians did a big restoration project here, they decided that they would cover the front of the medieval master's house with a lot of adornments, as I call it, Victorian bling. So you've got the porcupine, the blue porcupine, the crest of the Sydney family, who are our current patrons of the Lord Leicester. You've got some lovely little animated bears taken from the bear, the emblem of the bear and ragged staff of Warwickshire. And then you've got Robert Dudley's bear and ragged staff emblem. And then a faux black and white half-timbered facade that's been put on the front of the buildings.
So that's a Victorian facade that's been added onto medieval buildings, essentially.
Yeah, and we've kept it that way because it is historically important. This was the Victorian age was a hugely important time in the history of the Lord Leicester, and it's fun. It's actually quite
it's very
fun.
Striking. I'll say it's very striking.
Yeah.
And then we move around again to the next range, and this looks much more authentic and original. We've got this fantastic timber framed gallery, and a walkway underneath it. I can see sort of very Tudoresque looking arches. Is this 16th century or is this even earlier? Is this back to the original sort of 1300s, 1400s?
This is truly, you know, the beams that you see are truly medieval, built, put up in late 1300s,
That's
early
amazing.
1400s. But then you've got some Tudor adornments. For example, you see the leaded light windows there?
Mm.
That was definitely a Tudor addition. And they would have run actually all across the top here.
That makes sense, yes.
Yeah. So there's definitely, the Tudors have also had their hand in, in the facelifts of the Lord Leicester.
It's perfect. You don't see too many kind of galleries like that in such amazing condition. And I think that's not perhaps unique, but it's got to be one of just a handful in the country that are in as good a condition as that.
And as I said earlier, it's the reason why architects, architectural historians come here and they sort of look at it in amazement and say, you know, this has got to be in the top five of medieval buildings in Britain that are authentic and intact.
Yeah. And as you were saying before, this is kind of some of the administrative areas, and then on the top floor, sort of chambers, residential sort of areas there.
Yes.
And a lovely staircase going up to meet the gallery. So where do we need to go next, Heidi?
So the first place we will visit is the Guildhall.
Okay.
And the Guildhall is important in our historical chronology because this was the corporate headquarters, the kind of inner sanctum conference room of the guilds as they conducted business in Warwick.
I can't wait. So we are heading up the medieval staircase, as you can hear. It's fantastic, I presume, oak. And up into the first floor guild hall.
You have been listening to the first part of this month's episode of the Tudor History and Travel Show. The remainder of this episode is only available to members of my membership site, The Ultimate Guide to Exploring Tudor England. To join the wait list to become a member of The Ultimate Guide, click on the link in the description associated with this podcast. You will be added to the waiting list and I will email you just as soon as the doors to the membership next reopen. I'll see you there. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Tudor History and Travel Show. If you've loved the show, please take a moment to subscribe, like, and rate this podcast so that we can spread the Tudor love. Until next time, my friends, all that remains for me to say is happy time travelling!